Hey, White Sox fans, it's Brett Ballantini here, hosting once again, go figure, it's Southside Sox on the Farm. It's podcast number 6. Again, joining me, pretty much a stalwart here. I think I've only aced him out of one of these so far. It's Darren Black, yeah. The guy who does a couple of our nightly updates out of 6 each week, does our weekly update, does our monthly update. He's our miners guy. Darren, welcome. Thanks for joining me again.
Yeah, thanks again, Brett.
It is a very, very special podcast. I'm sure you're not even aware how special. This is the very last hippie podcast of all. Tomorrow, these beautiful locks, they all go away. So then I might have to adopt your different hat every week. Technology.
Yeah, hide the hair. Every single week is a new hat. But I'm hiding my hippie stuff, so it's kind of opposite.
Yes, I'm letting the freak flag fly, but this is the last time. Darren, special. You could have maybe scalped these tickets to nobody, yeah. But you could have tried.
I can just feel the excitement from
over here. I can see clearly you are betraying your excitement considerably, Darren. We're going to do something this week because it's come up. Oh, I don't know. Beyond just looking at the standings, it's come up that the White Sox system and organization is perhaps a bit underwhelming. And while that may be true, I thought it might be a good time, given that there's not any really cracking breaking news in the system. And we are still a little bit away from the draft and maybe that whole bigger, six games at least going every night later in the mm-hmm. summer, our favorite time of year. That perhaps we talk a little bit about the guys on each team, each step in the organization who might pack the most promise for the major leagues at this point. Right now, we're going to start with Kanapolis, the team that is last in the standings, but first in your heart. They've dropped again to 21 under 500, which I imagine it's hard to do if you're trying to do it, Darren. So, sort of, in a sense, hats off to Kanapolis for pulling off something nobody thought could happen. Of course, Darren is on record saying that they're going to be the second half champions at the low A. Yeah. He may want to revise that, but I'm not going to let him do it. That's a prediction. But they're clearly not going to win this year. They're probably already eliminated. But let's talk, Darren, about guys that you might consider most promising for the majors. I don't know who these guys are, and I'm not smart enough probably to predict who you're going to choose. So this is a sort of a fun visitor's choice podcast. I don't think you can avoid, despite the fact he may not have an actual defensive position, I don't think you can avoid talking, if we're talking about Kanapolis, Jose Rodriguez, the guy right now who'd probably be our offensive MVP thus far, 6-7 weeks into the season. Would he be on your list of guys who would be sort of on the major league radar?
Yeah. Out of anybody that is on a major league radar, they're all probably in as a actual position guy or a starter rotation type of player. Obviously, Charlotte has guys that'll be a bench guy every now and then. But if you're looking for cream of the crop prospects, they're all in Kanapolis. It's Jose Rodriguez has definitely shot up compared to everybody else, but it's still Jerry Kelly, it's still Trace Krogman, still James Beard is still interesting. I guess Benjamin Bailey's gone now, but he came into the year looking really well. Brian Ramos, DJ Gladney, and they all actually did pretty well last week, which is pretty nice. But definitely Jose Rodriguez has probably caught my eye the most, just because he's drilling the ball everywhere. When he goes through his slumps, it's just kind of singles because he just gets the bat on the ball so much more frequently than most guys on this Kanapolis team, though they're 7-28, so maybe that's not really apples-to-apples comparison. But, I mean, he's really showing out. He's probably not a shortstop, which is where he's playing right now, and then he'll probably move over to second, maybe back to third where he was in the DSL. But, I mean, he's got great gap power. He's got great speed. He's got everything that you want. Defense could use a lot of work, but the bat is certainly impressive.
Yeah, he's flashing something that I find interesting. If we're going to talk about his positives before we get to the defense, he's stealing bases. I think he's just gotten into double figures already. He's not acting like he's a brawny guy. And yeah, he's actually now flashing some power. I think he had a consecutive homer streak. It seems like he's doubled or tripled his homers just here in the last week. Those are two things you want to see if you want to try to be putting together sort of a 5-tool prospect.
Yeah, he hit coming into Tuesday when this comes out, he'll be on a 2-game home run streak. I think he hit 3 last week. But yeah, he is playing like Rami Gonzalez. He's much more projectable player than Rami Gonzalez, but their stats are very similar. A lot of speed, a lot of power. For Rodriguez, it's probably more gap to gap, but he can hit it everywhere. He's got a vicious swing. So if he maybe fine tunes it a little bit as he comes up, it might lead to more of an actual like home run power where he get 20 a year. Right now it's probably in mid teens. But yeah, he's the most impressive bat so far, probably in the entire farm system. Maybe Rami Gonzalez or Mike Rodolfo could squabble with that, but certainly a guy to keep an eye on for the next 3 years.
And he's a guy who is, well, maybe not an aggressive placement. He isn't exactly old for low A, so we're feeling comfortable about the fact that he's dominating, at least offensively at this point, and that's really putting him on a trajectory that makes him a little bit more of a breakout minor star at that low a level.
Yeah, most of Kanapolis is age appropriate. There are some guys, maybe a Bailey Horn that's a little bit older, but he also didn't have really a season to play last year because he was drafted in 2020. But for Rodriguez, first year in long season professional baseball, he's doing really well, so that's awesome. And this is his age 20 season, so everything looks great. I think he's actually about a year and a half younger than the average Kanapolis player. So double positive.
I haven't counted up or at least typed out, his errors. It does seem like he more are coming with the arm than the glove. Do you know anything about his arm? Is it an indication that he might end up having a second base in his future? Is it sort of early to tell because they're just sort of saying, all right, you're a guy who's you're a strong prospect for us. You've played short. Let's put you at short and see if you sink or swim.
Yeah, I'm not sure. He has 12 errors so far in 34 games. And I know errors are not everything, and I say that all the time, but 12 and 34 is not you can kind of get the picture. Like, yeah, you don't really need to like think really analytically and say like try to find something good. But I'm guessing he has some third base in his he's been third base shortstop for most of his career. So he obviously has good arm strength. I'm not sure if he's just throwing it all over the place or if he's just rushing. You can't really watch a ton of low A baseball games. But it's something he has to fix. And when he was at second base in the rookie leagues, now this is rookie leagues, so it's also a whole nother thing, but the errors were way down compared to what they were at shortstop. So second base, probably in his future, in my opinion, but you got to try him out at shortstop because that's a fantastic bat. Mm-hmm.
Okay, you threw out a bunch of names in sort of leading up to Jose, and so I nailed that one. Well done, Brett. You're paying a little bit of attention to the podcast, but I'm not really sure who your second guy might be that you choose. So I'm intrigued whether it could be an arm. I know there's obviously there's all the prime beef is at Kanapolis, but in terms of the guy that's jumping out at you, or maybe who has shown pretty well in this early season, who's the second guy you might sort of tab?
Yeah. So the second guy is the most talented by most people. It's if he was doing well this season, he would be the second guy, but it's Jared Kelly. He just has a lot to put together, and so maybe him not doing so well this season pushes his timeline back a bit. But a guy that could move up more quickly and get up to more of a consideration for Major League Baseball is Bailey Horn, who I mentioned a bit earlier. Mm-hmm. College arm, but he's a little bit older than what a normal low A pitcher would be at 23. And the weird thing, I think he was the MVP of this week, if I remember correctly. But I did write about him. He has started 4 games, relieved 2 games, and he's only allowed 1 run in those starting games. So it's like he has a Jacob DeGrom ERA of 0.056. Like, it's ridiculous when he's actually on the mound and starting. He always gets through 4 innings because everyone's on a pitch limit this year because of not pitching at all last season. So he's just, he'll probably move up the quickest. He's also got the added benefit of being a lefty, so maybe that's why they were trying to see if he was improved a bit in the bullpen. But I could definitely see him moving up the organization a bit more next year once he's got a full season under his belt.
Okay, Darren, I don't know if we are moving within the triad, if we're moving from triad to triangle or triangle to triad. I really can't figure out what's going on with North Carolina, but we are moving within North Carolina to the other A team that certainly has less intrigue and probably less sort of like no-brainer major league prospects right now. So truly, I'm a little bit perplexed as to who we tab from this team as guys to keep a real eye on. Luis Curbelo is obviously dominated with a bat by and large. It seems like maybe he's cooled a bit here the last week or two, but I'm not sure if he necessarily scratches his way on. Davis Martin's a guy that you're still not really sure is going to start or relieve, and he still just maybe flashed a little briefly some of his brilliance early. You wrote about Taylor Varnell and reasons why he might not be exactly on a radar. So I guess I'm pretty intrigued here. So lay somebody on me who we should be paying attention to with White Sox promise.
Yeah, so this one is kind of boring. I'm sure if Jason Bilaus or Jason B was still on the roster, I would have said him.
Okay.
But you got to go with the preseason. Chris Getz, promotion favorite, and Caleb Freeman.
Okay.
And he's still doing pretty well this year. He has a big walk problem. Like it's his worst that he's ever had, but I'm sure for some people taking a break, it's harder to come back sooner. And it's kind of messing with him right now, but he's still striking out a ton of guys. Obviously Chris Getz loved him going into the year, fastball curveball combo. It's always fantastic if you actually have a decent breaking ball and you're coming up. So he is the best guy. I figured he would have been promoted by now already, but he's been hurt, hasn't really come fully back yet. So he's the best guy, though.
Well, speaking of relievers and speaking of hurt, but probably speaking of a guy that wouldn't quite be on your radar, it's Luke Schilling, who's had a lights out start to the season. I believe perhaps even from your alma mater, perhaps. I don't know. I don't know for sure. I don't know everybody's etymology. But Luke Schilling has had a pretty good season, though. I'm getting us off track and talking about him because I don't think he is on your radar for the White Sox. Let's divert briefly and talk a little bit about Luke Schilling. Is he a guy that we should just be like, okay, you know, whatever. You think we get from him is gravy?
Yeah, I'm more in the mode that anything you get from him is gravy. But I think he was coming out of U of I. And he was hurt the season he was drafted. So he's kind of a project that you kind of have to get used to because he was drafted in 2018 and this is his first season playing professional baseball. So it's just, he's got a long way to go, but from that jump from not really playing college that much to striking out 14 per nine is pretty good. It was a 1.17 ERA. Like he's really shown out. But again, for guys that there are reason people get promoted, and Lane Ramsey was the one that was promoted, not Luke Schilling. Now, I'm starting to learn that maybe Winston-Salem might be something different because Danny Farquhar is apparently the pitching whisperer down there. So maybe they just want somebody that hasn't pitched really often to be with a good communicator. But he was passed up for the promotion for a guy that's pretty similar, righty, late inning guy, fireballer. So just he's a guy to keep an eye on, but there's a big difference between Caleb Freeman and Luke Schilling.
You know, it's great, Darren, to get like promoted and stuff, but really what you're looking for if you're a White Sox prospect, and of course to all you White Sox prospects out there listening, you really want to get mentioned by the Southside Sox on the Farm podcast. And Luke Schilling has succeeded in doing that and getting some serious time on the Farm podcast. So kudos to Luke, and we got our eye on you. But Darren, in terms of someone else maybe we should be looking for White Sox-wise in a probably challenging roster at Winston-Salem, who's another guy that maybe comes to mind that you'd sort of squeeze onto that list?
Yeah, so it's really slim pickings after Freeman and after Jason B was promoted. but probably the guy that everyone says was MLB-ready defensively, just needed to get the bat ready, and Yolbert Sanchez is probably the number two, especially now with not really – with Rami Gonzalez still struggling at shortstop in Birmingham, and I'm forgetting who the second baseman is. But he is looking like a guy that's finally getting the average up at least. He has the best average in Winston-Salem, which isn't saying terribly much because that offensive unit has not been playing well of late. But he's still walking a lot, striking out a bit more than comfortable, and he's still not really showing much power. So he's got to live on that bat, or the BABIP, and that's not really as high as it probably should be for a guy like him. But from all accounts, he's ready defensively. So I expect to see him up in the with Chicago at some point in his professional career.
Okay. Is he a guy you think is going to provide, he can even be competent with the bat, which it seems like he's gotten some stuff together after maybe a slow start, that he might see a promotion at least into Birmingham this year?
I think he should be in Double A. I'll try to compare him to Nick Madrigal. He doesn't have the get the bat on ball as Madrigal, and he actually does walk more. But he's probably better defensively than Madrigal. It's just he really has like no power whatsoever. Mm-hmm. I think he's only got 5 extra base hits on the year, and we're finally getting past a full month of play, and so 5 and 30-ish games is not quite a bit. So he's going to live and die by the single and the defensive play. But he should be in Birmingham this year.
And that would be maybe not even age appropriate, but certainly way more age appropriate because he's an older prospect for
yeah,
a
no, this
of
is
factors.
His age 24 years, so he's a bit old for high A. More age appropriate, 24 probably is triple A. But again, he's a guy that they signed in the international free agency as a bit older prospect, and then no 2020, and then finally actually playing in the U.S. going straight to high A is a bit of a culture shock, so you kind of watch out for that.
And do you see him as a flexible middle infield? Is he really skew more shortstop? Where do you project him defensively?
He's been second and short this year, so I kind of figure that's what they're getting him running for, to be a utility guy, because obviously in a perfect world, Tim Anderson and Nick Madrigal are your guys in the middle for forever. So seems like they're kind of moving him there. He hasn't played third yet, so I don't know if he has the capability to do that. He's a little short for third, 5'11", not that big, so we'll kind of have to see with that. But middle infield, he probably is, I think he's playing more as second base right now. So maybe they're kind of looking at him to stay there, but he's got a long way to go still.
Me and Darren are going to hop into the VW bus. The last time I get to drive it while I still have the hippie hair, we're going to drive out of North Carolina to Alabama, and we're going to visit Birmingham right after the break. So hang on for just a second. We'll be right back with you with Southside Sox on the Farm podcast number 6. Hey, White Sox fans, we are at number 6 of the Southside Sox on the Farm podcast. Joining me again, he's only missed one. That's just because I aced him out of it. It's not because he didn't want to be part of it. It's Darren. Darren Black, he's live from the storage locker. I am live from the haircut line where I'll be getting my trim tomorrow and putting my hippie status to the side. So enjoy this podcast. You might want to just pause the audio, switch over to video, because it's thrilling. Darren, I got to say, you see, the excitement from Darren is palatable. So you might want to just get in on it while you can. We have just hopped out of the microbus, Darren, and we somehow found ourselves in Alabama. Go figure. We're in Birmingham now. And the nice thing about going to Birmingham, Darren, is that there's actually some surprisingly intriguing prospects. Maybe not ones that are necessarily going to project into the major leagues, but they're definitely, I would say, a much better selection than you would have got just recently in our recent discussion of Winston-Salem. You've already brought up Rami Gonzalez. Obviously, Mike Rodolfo is here, and a pretty darn good pitching staff, both relief and starting. And so this is a challenging pick for you. I'm intrigued. I think there's at least one easy cop-out pick for you, but lay your first guy on me who we should probably have a radar as Chicago White Sox fans.
Yeah, so I'm guessing the cop-out was Mike Rodolfo.
There you go.
And he is definitely, he's the best guy on the team and the most likely to get on the majors is him as well. Now, whether it's for the White Sox or another team, we don't know yet. But he's back playing in the field. He's back to hitting the ball out of the park. He's back to hitting doubles when he doesn't hit out of the park. And he's hitting it everywhere, showing power everywhere in an environment that sucks offense out.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if they gave them the 2019 ball because a lot of people are hitting homers with Birmingham right now. Rami Gonzalez hit four last week.
What is going on?
So that's pretty impressive. But Mike Rodolfo is still the best guy on the team. He's still hitting. He has 8 homers already, 17 total extra base hits. He's actually striking out less than he was in 2019. Which for any guy to strike out less compared to 2 years ago and not playing is great. He's not walking as much, but he's making it up with actually putting the ball in play. His batting average is up 40 points, which is where the WRC plus is kind of getting that oomph. So he's been fantastic. He's looks like the guy and playing like the guy that we thought he was before, I think he had Tommy John surgery in 2019, but he's looking like that guy again.
Now, Darren, he's a guy that probably would have been disappointed with his assignment right out of camp. He's a guy you could have seen in Charlotte to begin the season. He's not there yet. The White Sox have a number of guys, including one who just got called up, and Brian Goodwin. They've got Mickey Matuk and maybe other names who are just sort of there. I don't want to say this filler, but obviously veteran guys, you're sort of insurance versus prospects like a Blake Rutherford. How long do we wait then before we see Miker in Charlotte? Because there's no way he's in Birmingham all year, right?
No, I do not think he's going to be in Birmingham all year. It kind of most of the promotions happen once the minor league baseball all-star season comes around, and maybe because of COVID it's much easier to move guys from low A to high A because they're all in they're all in North Carolina. Maybe they just don't want to do it that often, move guys from Alabama back to North Carolina. Not sure, but he deserves to be there already. It's just you've got Luis Gonzalez, Blake Rutherford, and then Gavin Sheets is a kind of outfielder that you all need to get playing time. And same problem with the defense as other players we've talked about so far. Jake Berger is really not doing so well at third base. So if you need to give him a break, you have to give him DH because he has to hit because he hasn't hit for 4 years. So there's just a log jam there. I still think the most likely top prospect to get traded is Mike Rodolfo too. So I don't know if they would just want to keep him down lower for a bit since Double A is where the bigger prospects are nowadays, instead of the 4A guys in Charlotte. But yeah, I don't see a huge reason why he's in Double A, just trying to find reasons that he is, because he deserves it.
Yeah, and if he's being showcased in any way, which let's face it, any of these guys who aren't on a major league team are being showcased to whatever degree, maybe it's just a matter of now, even though it's not a great offensive environment, maybe just not wanting to mess with what's working. You begin him in Charlotte, he's got to adjust to Charlotte, true. Even though it's a better hitting environment, his playing time is going to get squeezed a little bit. So yeah, maybe it's just a matter of, all right, just roll with what's working because it's working. He's been a little hot and cold, but man, he's gotten pretty much hot now, and he's just sort of sticking with the slugging percentage and extra base power. Okay, there are a lot of other possibilities to choose from in Birmingham, including a lot of good arms. So I'm intrigued to know, again, visitor's choice, because I'm very polite here on the Farm Podcast. Who's your second choice?
So second choice, he's a reliever that I've liked a long time, and it's still Bennett Souza. There's probably better players like Connor Pilkington, Rami Gonzalez are probably better, more impactful. But I can see an actual roster spot in the majors for Bennett Souza. He's a lefty. They use him in late inning situations. He strikes out a ton of guys. He's had a bit trouble this year compared to previous. But I'm not really too worried because the pitching staff has been in a bit of a slump total for the past couple of weeks. But yeah, it's Mike Rodolfo far and away. And then Bennett Souza is another guy that's probably most likely to get up there sooner than later.
What distinguishes Souza? I mean, really, obviously most systems, including the White Sox, have a dearth of left-handed relief prospects. They've already cut Jacob Lindgren loose, who's sort of a prospect, sort of a veteran prospect, I guess. Cody Medeiros had a strong camp and I think has done pretty well in Charlotte. But he's after that, it's nothing. And so you really do have to lean on maybe both Souza and Andrew Perez. What's distinguished the two, or has Souza just sort of got his foot in the door just a little quicker than Perez?
I think I've mentioned this before that the reason why he has a foot quicker in the door is just because he's a bit older and a bit more polished. But he's also just doing a lot better this season too. Mm-hmm. And he's getting late inning looks that Andrew Perez still is, but Bennett Souza is getting more of those late inning looks. And he's striking out a ton of guys. Again, this White Sox system for pitching this year, they all have walk problems. I don't know why they all have near double-digit walk rate. But he's striking out almost 40% of his batters. So if you're looking for a guy to come in and shut down the better hitters in a lineup, you'd rather have the guy that strikes out players at 40% clip.
All right, Darren, we're getting closer to the majors now. Let's just take one more trip in the VW bus. Let's get back into North Carolina. Do not leave anything in the back seat or the trunk, because we got to turn this thing in now because, you know, it's going. So we're in Charlotte, back in Charlotte, closest to the majors. We've seen even some surprise call-ups this year by the White Sox, or some surprise guys kept down a little longer than you might think. And I guess there are a couple obvious choices, but then again, the White Sox need arms, perhaps maybe even more than they need bats. So I'm intrigued to know who you consider your couple guys who really should be most on the radar for White Sox fans in Charlotte.
Yeah, so I'm going to take Gavin Sheets first. He's a guy that I love preseason, and he's still doing pretty well. The power is finally coming, and is looking like he's going to have like an actual – pretty near a 200 OPS, or not OPS, a 200 ISO, which is very, very good. The only problem with him right now is it seems like he's actually selling out that plate discipline that he had, walking or near 10%. Now it's just at 5. He's cut that in half. The strikeouts aren't at a worrying rate, but it would be a career high if the season ended. But right now he's just actually putting the ball in play and hitting it out more often than he has before. So, and that's what you were looking for him for since he was drafted in 17 or 16, and now he's actually showing it. But he's probably the best hitter. I'm going to kind of cheat on this one for the pitcher because I'm sure most people are saying, well, Jimmy Lambert and stuff, but the Sox don't need a starter. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to take Tyler Johnson, another guy that I really liked preseason. And he's been bouncing around during his rehab assignment right now, but he hasn't allowed a run during his rehab assignment in 3 games. He's been pitching in Kannapolis the past couple days. So once he comes back to Charlotte, see if he's vastly improved, because before he was put on the IL, he was not doing so hot. So hopefully that he's got himself right after his time with Winston-Salem and Kannapolis, and that he can get back, because he's a late inning guy. After Zach Birdie got his Tommy Johns, he was the best reliever in the system, still probably is. So he's a good guy to keep an eye on.
Yeah, it's interesting. In the bullpen there, as much as I'm talking about how the White Sox have no lefties in their system, really their two best relievers at this point probably are Jace Fry, which is sort of a cheat because he's technically a White Sox player, and Cody Medeiros. The right-handers have continued struggling, including Tyler Johnson, but he's the guy you think as a right-handed arm has the most promise at this point still in the system.
For sure. Cody Medeiros and the other guy you mentioned, I'm forgetting.
Jace Fry.
Yeah, Jace Fry, with the way he's pitching right now, he could probably be taken off the rehab assignment and put in the majors, but maybe you just don't want to make that decision right now. But Cody Medeiros is he's not a hard throwing guy. He's just kind of a reliever or starter that they made reliever, and that he's actually doing pretty well. Right. So I'm kind of out on him until he can actually keep proving that he's an actual late inning guy. Cause now that the lefties have to pitch to 3 batters, and we see that with Aaron Bummer more often, where after he gets away from those lefties, he keeps struggling. Mm-hmm. And then it's kind of a snowball effect. I want to see him do more of that. But Tyler Johnson, he was a an actual closer before he, I think, tore his labrum in the 2019 season. And I thought he would have been up in the majors in 2019 if he was fully healthy. Same in 2020 if there was a minor league season. But yeah, once he's back, I fully expect him to be really good. And if they need to move on from Evan Marshall, Jose Ruiz, someone like that, I would expect him to be the first guy that they call up.
You think other than Jace Fry, and as you mentioned now, just Tyler Johnson, to give you the sort of that late punch of an arm, are there other guys who've distinguished themselves at Charlotte in that pen who could sort of push the major leaguers? Like you mentioned, Evan Marshall struggling this year. Jose Ruiz is sort of like, he was sort of the last guy and he's done fairly well this year, but he's your last guy in the bullpen. So you're not going to pin too much on him. Is there any other movement you see coming from Charlotte to push people out of the way in Chicago? Or is it just at that point beyond maybe Tyler Johnson and certainly Jace Fry at some point? Is it just a matter of if there's an injury, then we'll just suck the hottest guy up from Charlotte?
I think at this point, it's probably just if there's an injury. If you're looking for a guy just to replace them, it's the Fries and Tyler Johnsons. And then if Zach Birdie maybe puts it together just because of the pedigree that he has and the fastball that he has, maybe he can push it, but he really hasn't shown that he could do that yet. But if someone's injured and they got to look for a guy, righty would be Alfredy Gomez. He's come up from AA and is still doing really, really well. And so he's got to be the guy to keep an eye on. And then a spring training signing. He wasn't really good in spring training at all, but on he's a lefty and they need lefties, and he's a throws really hard, which they're all pluses in this Major League Baseball. And Nick Turley, he's doing really well. He's not walking as many batters as he did last season, or even in 2017 when he was pitched before that, and he's striking out like a ton of people. So he's actually looked pretty well or pretty good. So those two are probably the guys if there's an injury. But if someone is looking to replace somebody, not by a trade, just promotion, it's probably Tyler Johnson and then Jace Fry whenever his rehab-ish thing that he's doing is over.
What you're saying is Charlotte should be better than 13-22. They're just terribly underperforming because we sound like we got some legitimate guys down there.
Yeah, well, they're terribly underperforming because the starting pitching has been underperforming most of the time. Jonathan Stever hasn't looked so great.
Yeah.
Jimmy Lambert had a great start last week, his first actual really great start, which is a very encouraging sign if they do need to call up a pitcher for the long haul. But he more than often than not is not doing so hot. And then the hitting's been hot and cold because Jake Berger is kind of plateaued and looking kind of like Yermin Mercedes is hot start and then not really keeping going, but you kind of got to expect that for a guy that hasn't hit in 4 years, that he's going to be hot and cold, and he's striking out a ton, so that's always going to look bad for him.
Well, what can we guarantee you for Southside Sox on the Farm podcast number 7 next week? We can guarantee you a different hat from Darren. That seems like a safe bet. Probably more Charlotte talk, more talk than probably the Charlotte Knights warrant. All apologies to the Charlotte Knights. You will see a host here, still probably out of his element talking about the minors, but trying to fake it really well, and with a little bit less around the collar. And who knows, maybe even another guest. I keep threatening that other people will crash the podcast, but let's see, aside from Anders Johansson and Chico Marks, the cat, along with Julie Brady. And then James Fox, who made the token appearance to launch this whole thing in episode number 1. It's pretty much just me and Darren, and he carries me. You know, I ask a couple questions, maybe not totally dumb. So then he answers and gives you all the information, all the good stuff you guys want. So keep on reading. It's 2 nights a week from Darren. And of course, once weekly with the weekly update, which is just published on Monday. And you can still read that and get all the updates. We pretty much ignored the MVPs there. We sort of blew off the update this week, which we were a little bit more closely tallying and detailing because we've had a couple weird weeks in a row where it's not necessarily all the most promising names to talk about in terms of having a good week. So it seemed like a good time to pause and talk about the guys at this point, 6-7 weeks in, with teams from 7-28 to actually doing pretty well in Birmingham. and talk about who projects into the major leagues. And Darren's done a good job of that for us with, I think, an eight pack, maybe cheated a little bit. Maybe we got up to a dozen, but an eight pack of guys you can really keep your eyes on as the season goes on, as we're heading closer and closer to the All-Star break for the minors. So Darren, thanks for enlightening us a bit. Who knows? We may do this again, say seven episodes down the road, and maybe some of the names will change. They probably will have. So I look forward to doing that with you. And probably most likely, again, the VW bus isn't going to be in the parking lot. I'm going to look a little different. You're going to have a different hat, but we'll probably do this again in a week.
I will. Yep. I'll Fair be enough. Here with a different hat.
All right. Thanks everybody for listening, reading, sometimes even viewing. We'll be back with you on the farm in another week.